All right, folks, Ishai Fleischer here, and I'm on the road right now in Houston, Texas. The show today is special because I record people along this road, along this journey here in the great United States of America, but all with an eye towards the land of Israel and to a greater connection to Hashem. And so you are going to hear now from David Friedman, Ambassador David Friedman. You're going to hear from Joel Griffith, who made a party just for the new government of Israel. You'll hear from campus activists and Jews that are out there on the front lines of staying Jewish and not assimilating, and all that in this good land, fighting the fight of staying connected to Hashem, staying Jewish, not assimilating, and not succumbing to the anti-Semitism that is indeed challenging even this good land. I'll tell you more about what I'm doing in Houston, Texas at the end of the show, but enjoy, and let's rock it with Ambassador David Friedman. All right, folks, Ishai Fleischer here, and I'm with the ambassador. You know, in Italy, they had a guy named the avvocato, the advocate, and he was the head of Italy. We have one ambassador, and that's David Friedman, author of Sledgehammer, ambassador to Israel from the United States under the Trump administration. And his exploits are legend, from the move of the embassy to Jerusalem, the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, to the Abraham Accords. His name is already legend in the Jewish world. His book, by the way, Sledgehammer, is fabulous. Not only is it interesting, but also a good read, a well-written good read. And I congratulate you, Mr. Ambassador, for that. Just a few thoughts about what's going on today in the Jewish world. I came down to Florida first to Florida State University, FSU, to talk with students. And I thought they would ask me a lot of questions about Israel, but they asked me all the time about anti-Semitism. They're facing a lot of anti-Semitism out there. And I wanted to ask you first thing, what is the state of anti-Semitism? And give us a thought about how to counteract it these days.
Well, I think it's as bad as it's been in our generation, maybe going back longer. It's very, very disturbing. And I think it falls into different categories. You know, the one that in America, you know, we feel the most acutely is just, you know, street violence. People are beating up Jews, people who look Jewish, who identify as Jewish, wearing kippot or wearing, you know, Hasidic garb. You know, they're just walking down the street and they're getting beaten up. And that is, as much as anything, a function of the failure of our law enforcement system in America. You know, we have, because the people that do this don't go to jail. There are these extraordinary, you know, cases of guys who beat up Jews. They may get arrested. They're let out almost immediately. They strike plea deals for no jail time or minimal jail time, even though they admit they have no remorse. They want to do it again. So you have this whole, you know, failure of law enforcement in America, which has, which I think is unprecedented and is contributing to the feelings by anti-Semites that they can be anti-Semites with impunity. So that's sort of, let's call it the street level of anti-Semitism. Then you have, you know, the fact that, you know, among American universities, and we have, you know, we have some great universities, people learn all kinds of highly sophisticated, you know, areas of academic thought, but if you are a pro-Israel professor on an American university, you're not getting tenure. And the result of that is Israel does not get a fair shake among the smartest, you know, the best and the brightest of our society. The people who are going to be the leaders of American society in the future are learning that Israel, the right of Israel to exist is itself dubious. So that's very dangerous because that does not augur well for the future of America's support for Israel. So I think I worry about that more because in the long term that could be the most significant problem that we face. And then of course there's just a general anti-Zionism movement, which is people try to masquerade anti-Semitism, saying, "I don't hate Jews, I just don't like Israel." Of course, it's a crock. If you're an anti-Zionist, you're an anti-Semite. But that movement is strong as well. We have to fight back. We have to fight back on all fronts. And the most important thing is we must be brutally candid and unapologetic about the rights of the Jewish people to live in their biblical homeland. Never apologize for it. Never make excuses for it. Never try to rationalize it. I mean, the Jewish people and the land of Israel is something that has been a value of ours and frankly of America. You know, given all the Judeo-Christian values upon which America has been based, it's something that that we just need to stand for and not compromise. And I think we'll win this fight, but it's very concerning right now.
And that includes also this new wave of black anti-Semitism, Kanye West, etc., that has made anti-Semitism cool.
Yeah, it's really disheartening because, you know, the Civil Rights Movement was really a partnership between the black community and the Jewish community because, you know, in the 1960s, it was the Jews that marched with Martin Luther King and with his colleagues, you know, in the South. I mean, three Jews were murdered. You know, that famous movie, Mississippi Burning, three Jews were murdered, you know, getting, you know, helping blacks register to vote. We've always had, you know, a deep sympathy for any people that doesn't have civil rights. And Martin Luther King himself was very much a Zionist. So, you know, naturally we are allies. We should be allies. But that's all now upside down, as so much of the world is. It's upside down. And it's, again, it's a much, very much a cause of concern.
All right, let's talk about something that you were one of the spearheads of, and that's the Abraham Accords. Give me the temperature, the state of the state of the Abraham Accords. An example of some questions for you is, I don't see a lot of UAE folks visiting Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, and I'm getting the feeling that it's a little bit like the peace with Jordan or the peace with Egypt, where we have a supposedly warm peace, but in fact, it's not so warm. There's a difference, though. Israelis are going to Dubai and Abu Dhabi pretty much en masse. But what's the situation? Another thing happened, which was Itamar Ben-Gvir is going up to the Temple Mount. The UAE came out strongly against that. And, you know, for some of us, it was like, let's put it this way. Those who defend the Abraham Accords, it was a lot of people were like, you see, they're not like your friends and all that kind of stuff. So, what's the state of the covenant?
Look, I think the Abraham Accords are still on solid ground, and I think that you know, these are all very new relationships that have been neglected, you know, by the Biden administration. So, you know, with any new relationship, you know, there are going to be, you know, bumps in the road. There'll be some turbulence, and I think, you know, we'll find more. I would say to you, Yishai, though, that, you know, maybe a year and a half ago, when you had the you had the war in Gaza that, you know, came after the Abraham Accords, only about a month after the Abraham Accords, and you know, there were people in America and in Europe who were saying that Israel was using disproportionate force and it was Israel's fault because it was fighting back too hard. To their credit, you know, that was never a position taken by any of our Abraham Accord partners. And I went and met with many of them after the war because I actually wanted to ask them a question. You know, here was our first test. How did you think we did? And they all said, look, we passed with flying colors. We understand Israel's challenges. We're not looking to demagogue this issue. We understand exactly what Hamas is capable of doing because we face the same threats on our own soil. I think in many respects the Abraham Accord countries have performed admirably. Now here's the problem. They all look, in any of their international reactions in the Middle East, they all look first to the United States, right? You know, nobody is going to be more pro-Israel than America. And when they see that America itself is not standing up for Israel, I think that's where things start to get, you know, confusing. Now, what's crazy about all this is the rights of the Jewish people to pray on the Temple Mount actually is not controversial or debatable. If you look at the peace treaty between Israel and Jordan in 1994, there's a section that deals with holy sites, and this is not a section on sovereignty. It's just a section on access, and it says that both countries will afford all of the citizens of the other country full, complete, unfettered access to all the respective holy sites as long as they're members of any of the three monotheistic faiths. Jordan agreed to that. I mean, Jordan agreed. I'm sounding like a lawyer, so let me make it simple. Jordan agreed that Jews could pray on the Temple Mount. Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, that's what they agreed to. Okay, and they've walked that back from the day they signed that treaty, and Israel, you know, hasn't enforced it the way they could, and you know, that's Israel's decision for whatever geopolitical or security reasons they choose. But I don't understand the criticism when, you know, Ben-Gvir went up, you know, on a morning, it was quiet, it wasn't provocative. You know, hundreds of members of the Knesset over the years have gone onto the Temple Mount. So I think this was, you know, an attempt by whoever are the enemies of Israeli, you know, prayer at their holiest site, whoever those people are, I'm not even sure who they are, this was certainly an effort by them to make really a mountain out of a molehill.
Okay, I have one last question for you, and it's something that I don't usually cover on the show so much, but I think that you, throughout all your career, have lived in the two worlds, Israel and America. When I was living many years ago in Beit El, you were the chairman of Beit El Institutions and helping raise money for building of Beit El. So I, you know, heard your name back then working in Arutz Sheva. So I wanted to ask you about, you know, usually the show is pretty much 100% about Israel. Mm-hmm. But I do want to ask you about American Jewry. How's it doing? And also about Florida. It's interesting. There's a real sense that New York is kind of being emptied out a little bit, or at least there's a big move and there's a big financial and human movement down here. There's also a sense of polarization as though this is a free state. That's one of the languages around here. DeSantis, people feel safe here. They don't like the politics of New York, especially Orthodox Jews. And then there's always that chatter about, you know, America not going in the right direction, or maybe it's past its prime, that kind of thing. At the same time, when you come here, you see that it's still a very powerful, very big, successful country. And at the same time, when you look at the government of the United States, it's not that same solid foundation that we were used to when I was a kid. So what's the state of affairs for America and American Jewry?
So it's a very complicated question and could result in a very complicated answer, which I'm sure you don't have time for. So let's try to break it down a little bit. Look, they say that every empire, you know, has about a 300 to 400 year maximum, you know, longevity. Ottoman Empire, British Empire, go back, you know, the Roman Empire. I hope that's not the case for America, because the world needs a strong America. We're being disserved right now by a very weak president, partly because of his policies, partly because of his infirmities. He's not the right guy to be leading, forgetting about Democrat or Republican, he's not the right guy to be projecting American strength, which is so important to keeping the world peaceful and prosperous. But that changes. I mean, politics, one thing you can tell about politics, it changes. I learned that the hard way. You know, the winds of politics are very volatile. But in this case, I hope that volatility continues, because we need a change for the better. You know, as between New York and in Florida, I mean, New York is still the third largest Jewish community in the world, right? After Israel, and then America, and then New York all by itself is the third largest Jewish community. And I believe New York has a future. There needs to be, it just needs to go back to the old days under Bloomberg or Giuliani, where, you know, they prosecuted the laws. People who committed horrible crimes were taken out of society. It's not complicated. Got to support the cops. Got to support the teachers. Got to allow people to choose their schools, whether public schools or private schools. Make sure people get a good education. It's simple. It's blocking and tackling. We lost that in New York. We have to get that back. And Florida is great. I mean, Florida is just great. I mean, I moved here. I know why people moved here. It's not just the weather. It is a more hospitable environment. It's an incredibly pro-Israel environment. South Florida has, you know, a lot of Israelis and a lot of pro-Israel Jews, and it's a pleasure to be here. But I'm not giving up on New York either, and we can't give up on New York, because it's just New York is New York. Mm. So look, there's, you know, we're in a challenging period of time. We've been through greater challenges, and even in our lifetimes, which don't go back long enough to face the real challenges of the first half of the 20th century. Those were really hard times. So we will get through this and persevere, and Jewish people will always persevere and flourish. And of course, the state of Israel is the greatest thing to happen to the Jewish people in thousands and thousands of years. And we have to make Israel strong and prosperous always.
Ambassador David Friedman, thank you very much for your time. The book is called Sledgehammer, and the good news is that people who don't know, it's also on Audible. Okay, and those of us who love audiobooks and really cherish audiobooks, Netanyahu's book is also on Audible. Mm-hmm. Other people from your team, their books are also there. Sure. But your book is there, and it is fabulous. I highly recommend it. It is it's not so long. You can read it over a Shabbat or two. But it gives you a real sense of being a political insider, and also shows you the great balancing act between acting diplomatically, but also acting forthrightly, meaning to say wanting to achieve something, not just, you know, doing it politically correct so that, you know, everybody's balanced off and that nobody gets offended. No. Wanting to achieve actual things. Comment on that.
Well, look, I tried to give that perspective in the book. It is a balancing act. You know, I'm representing the United States of America. My loyalty is in this job. We're to the United States. That's my job. I was fortunate enough to know to work for people that saw Israel as an essential ally of the United States, and one who, when we support Israel, we're really supporting America. It's really a quintessential American value to support Israel. Not everybody feels that way, but the people on our team all felt that way. Every day, you know, I went to work, I was prepared to quit if I was asked to do something that would compromise my values, and I'm grateful to God that day never came.
Yeah, not only were they not compromised, but they were moved forward. You also are working on a feature film that you filmed in Israel. It was covered with Secretary of State Pompeo about the Israel Biblical Highway, about Route 60 and the biblical stories that took place there. We're very excited to see that come out, and we thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you, Yishai. Pleasure.
All right, folks, Yishai Fleischer here, and I am on top of a beautiful hotel on the rooftop, pool rooftop here. And I'm standing, looking at Miami, and I'm surrounded by Jews and pro-Israel people, and we're celebrating a party that I never thought I would be at, and I didn't expect to be at this kind of party, a party celebrating the new government of Israel, the new coalition government. My friend Joel Griffith, who is a fellow at the Heritage Foundation, but here he's wearing the hat of Young Jewish Conservatives, and he's gathered these people together. Joel, so great to see you here in Miami. And thank you so much for this party. Tell me about why you organized a party like this.
Well, it's great to see you, Yishai. You were the one who gave me a tour 10 years ago now, the Tomb of the Matriarchs and the Patriarchs. So it's very good to see you here. And we thought, as Jewish conservatives, as proud Americans, as proud Zionists, we thought that we would host a party to celebrate the incoming government in Israel. And one of the most important reasons that we want to celebrate that government is because this new government is going to strongly support the right of our Jewish relatives overseas and across the world to actually live in the heart of the homeland of the Jewish people, in Judea, in Samaria, where your home is. And I think it's all important to recognize this ideal. This is a core component of Zionism, recognizing this land was given to us thousands of years ago. It's our legal right, and it's not just a place where we can be safe. It should be a place where we can thrive in the heart of the homeland.
Okay, so Joe, that was a good speech about Israel, but we're celebrating here something more specific, which is this coalition. You build this evening specifically as certain accomplishments that you hope this coalition can do. Tell me about that.
I think one of the main objectives we hope the new coalition can achieve is actually reforming the Israeli judiciary. There's a much to be proud of about Israel, but the way that judiciary currently has and oftentimes a stranglehold over the democratic process, where it becomes rule by judicial fiat rather than rule by the legislature, and a balance between the legislature and the judiciary and the executive branch, we hope that there'll be tremendous strides made to ensure that judiciary going forward in Israel will be there not to create the law, but to ensure that the law is being properly followed and implemented.
Right. So judiciary is one thing. There's other things that this government hopes to achieve, including rule of law, basically less bullies, less jihadists, less prisoners from murderers of Jews celebrating in prison, getting a doctorate degree and having a ball over there. Like a little bit more sanity in terms of who's the good guy, who's the bad guy. A Jewish state that's proud of itself, not suppressing minorities, but certainly ensuring that they're not suppressed by the bullies that suppress the Jews as well, and that's the jihad.
Well, that's right. And we see a lot that the lines are blurred between the good and the bad. And we've seen that for years with the United States. And you see the United States that has funneled billions of dollars to the Palestinian Authority, an organization that we know pays terrorists who are doing prison time. They put them on the payroll. And I think it's incumbent that both the United States and Israel continue to recognize who our friends are and who the enemies are. And I'll tell you what, in many, many instances, the Palestinian Authority has not been the friend of the Jewish people, of Israelis, and they haven't been a friend of the Palestinians either.
You don't have to mince words on this podcast. I think we both know the Palestinian Authority is regressive, jihadist, corrupt, backwards. It is a machine of anti-Semitism and anti-Arabism, in fact. And it's a replacement theory to take away Israel and replace it with Palestine. Okay, one last question, because I want to let you get back to the party. You talked about enemies and friends. You're a conservative, but the U.S. government currently is not that, okay? And in many ways, funds the enemies of Israel, calls for the cutting away of parts of the land of Israel, et cetera, et cetera. as an American Jew, how do you feel about America right now? Do you see it getting back in line with your values?
Well, I'm troubled at the direction our country is going, and particularly over the last 2 years with President Biden. We saw so much progress made over the preceding 4 years in terms of moving our embassy to Jerusalem, recognizing Jerusalem as the eternal capital of Israel, recognizing the right of the Jewish people to live and build in Judea and Samaria. And this administration has taken us backwards. And two, in the terms of peace agreements that we saw made between Israel and former enemies, we've seen so much of that put on ice and even going backwards. I'm very troubled, but I'm also encouraged. And I'm encouraged that American people seem to be waking up. The Jewish population in particular seem to be becoming more alert to, once again, who our friends are. And I'm optimistic for the future.
And you're optimistic about the future of an American government that will go back in the direction of pro-Israelism like we saw under the Trump administration?
Yes, all is not lost. Many of those who worked so hard during the 4 years, they're still here. We're still here. We're waiting for a change. And in the meantime, we're going to continue to speak truth and to show the world that there is a right, there's a wrong on this.
Joel Griffith from Young Jewish Conservatives and the Heritage Foundation, I want to tell you, you're the man making a party for the Coalition of the State of Israel here in Miami. Right on. That's the way to do it. And that I think, is the right attitude. It's not just to be like, let's wait and see. It's let's celebrate the nationalist impulse in Israel, which is going to create a stronger Israel and a better and safer Middle East.
And Yishai, there's many of fellow Jewish Americans such as myself that we love seeing the updates that you're doing from Hebron. We love that you're there representing not just those who are living in Hebron, but representing the Jewish people worldwide and our interests in the heartland.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Yishai.
All right, folks, I am on the FSU campus, Florida State University, at the Chabad house of Rabbi and Rebbetzin Oirichman. And I'm here with Rabbi Schneer Oirichman, who has been here for 23 years at this Chabad house. Lots of ups and downs, lots of stories, including even having your shul burnt down, not by anti-Semitism or anything, but just by some kind of accident, but really giving you a chance to also rebuild your synagogue, which is what's happening right now. Rabbi Oirichman, you said something to me before in conversation which I thought was very important. You said to me that campus is the front line because it's here that where a young American Jewish person decides which direction they're going to go in life. Are they going to go in the Jewish path or they're going to assimilate out? Is that right? Is it really that stark of a moment?
Yeah, so we see this in the past 23 years that we're here, that students, that young men and women that came through our doors and had just such an impact on their life and the entire life's change. Jewish men and young Jewish women who were going out with non-Jewish men and non-Jewish women, and we're able to actually separate them and bring them together and see them getting married and see them building a family and involved in Jewish communities. And they say, they tell me, Rabbi, we wouldn't meet here today, we'd be in a completely different place. We wouldn't know where we would be.
Right. And I saw a lot of them over Shabbat. But, you know, Chabad here is able to get a small percentage, a strong percentage, but a small percentage of the 4,000 Jewish students that are on campus. This is not a strongly Jewish campus, although there's a lot of Jews here. The folks that are coming here are not from like a strong Jewish background, like, I don't know, like a Queens College or something like that, or certainly a Yeshiva University. Tell me a little bit about reaching out to these students and bringing them in. And I guess I have a follow-up question for that. But what do you think about that, the issue of getting them to be proudly Jewish?
It's very difficult today. It's very hard because students that come here to campus, they feel lonely. They don't feel like there are 4,000 Jewish students on campus. They feel like they may be the only one. Mm. And there are no Jewish fraternities and Jewish sororities here. And so it's a very assimilated place. And because of that, students don't feel a sense of belonging to a Jewish community. So we have to work very, very hard on creating a sense of a Jewish community and creating Jewish life to make them feel that they are part of something bigger. That's why we did Friday night, a big dinner to bring them all out. I mean, to bring a lot of them out with the other two Jewish organizations on campus, Hillel and the JSU, and invited you to come and speak to show them that there is a Jewish community, to teach them about Israel, to teach them about the Jewish people, to make them feel proud of who they are. So they walk out of there and say, wow, I'm not the only one. And typically, that's we hear after such an event, people say, well, I didn't know there's so many Jewish students on campus, even though there are, but it's not how it feels.
Okay, now, I was very honored that you invited me. Thank you very much. At the same time, I thought to myself, was it such a good political move for you? I was thinking to myself, because I thought to myself, you know, I don't think I'm controversial. I think I'm nice. But some people think that that some of my opinions are controversial, and I haven't been ashamed to say my opinions. At the same time, you know, I have more, by the way, pro-Arab time under my belt than, you know, anybody else is out against me. But bottom line is, I thought to myself, why would you take the let's call it quote-unquote risk to invite me out? Because, and here's the issue that I really wanted to ask you about, the change in the American atmosphere, this wokeness and the offense, I'm offended, this is offensive, and the atmosphere that it's not an open intellectual atmosphere, let's hear from a weird different speaker. It's not like that at all. It's quite the opposite. It's what they call a cancel culture. So tell me a little bit about the event that we had vis-a-vis like bringing a person like me, but more important to me is the issue of how you're dealing with the woke students and the cancel culture.
So we have to create a strong Jewish environment, teach people about Israel, teach people about the Jewish community, teach people about things that they're not aware of. So our job is to create awareness, to create Jewish awareness, create Israel, pro-Israel awareness on campus. So bringing someone like you to speak to them, I think it helps show them that, you know, you're not crazy, extreme, right wing, that, you know, that there is, and you saw that last night. You saw the students sitting there and like they're all sitting and listening and thinking, wow, this guy really has what to say, you know. And so that's that's our job. Our job is to create opportunities where these students can come together and they could be aware of the Jewish community, could be aware of Israel in a positive way, which I think that's what you did with your speech on Friday night. Very universal, very inclusive, but still teaching them about Israel, teaching them about Jewish pride, teaching them about what does it mean to be a Jew, what does it mean to support Israel in a very nice and positive way. So if we'd be afraid of doing it, then why we're here? Mm-hmm. You know, we're here to do things that are a little risky, a little crazy maybe in some people's opinions, but we've got to do it.
Your shul burnt down and you're rebuilding now? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, so last May, we right the first week of summer break, we were in Miami, and there were rabbinical students who were here for Shabbat, And at 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:30 in the morning, we hear from the fire department that there was a fire in the synagogue and the shul completely burned down. Apparently, fire started sometimes after Shabbat, but nobody was here, so nobody saw anything. The entire area is full of students, and there were most of them, almost all of them, were away for first week of break. So by the time they found out about the fire, it was already, and the entire synagogue was gone.
So, but nobody got hurt, but the books, Sefer Torah, were burnt?
Yeah, so nobody was there, thank God. Nobody was physically in the building. My son was next door at the house, and yeah, we had two Torahs that burned down completely. We had to bury them. We had all ceremony, wow, burying them in Miami in the gravesite, and wow, doing all funeral procession and everything, books.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah, yeah, books, all the books, everything we had there, pretty much about $250,000 worth of stuff, anything from kitchen equipment to computers to the entire library. And a lot of classes my wife and I have written down, because we are both Israelis. So we write our materials in Hebrew, although we use English materials, but we write it to ourselves in Hebrew. So we had tons and tons of classes. We wrote down to ourselves, and everything was gone.
Wow. And just quick story. My listeners know about this. A few, around COVID, I was in San Francisco, and my tefillin were stolen. And my tefillin were stolen and from a car that they broke the windows, and they pulled out what they thought was a laptop, but it wasn't a laptop, it was my tefillin. I have my Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. And at first it was heartbreaking, and it took me a little time, and then I remembered some Hasidic stories, and it gave me strength again to be like, okay, Hashem, if you want me to restart my life, and buy a new pair of tefillin and get going again, good, I'm ready to be renewed. But a synagogue that you built and fundraised for and all the stuff and the lessons, how did you deal with that emotionally? And what's going on next?
So you know the famous story with Rabbi Akiva and his friends, that they go into the Beis HaMikdash and they see a fox going out of the Kodesh HaKodeshim, all the holiest, and they cry and he laughs. And the Rabbi was all sicha, all discourse explaining that he was able to see the root of everything, that this is not part of the destruction. This is part of something much bigger, that without that, this bigger thing wouldn't come. The third piece of Megiddo, just like you said, mm-hmm, if the prophecy of Uriah was fulfilled, you know, the Beis HaMikdash, that Tzion will be Tzion to Sadet HaResh, Tzion will be plowed like a field, and he says now the prophecy of Zechariah will definitely be fulfilled. All Yishvu Na'arim U'Na'arot U'Chotzot Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim will be built. So same thing here, you know, the only way we look at it, especially as Chassidim, as Chabad Chassidim, who grew up in the teaching of the Baal Shem Tov and the teaching of the Alter Rebbe and all the Rebbe's, about just looking at things only in positive, that everything that Hashem is doing is good, and it must be good. So first you have that feeling, like you said, oh, the Torah was burned and the books, but then you realize it must be something much bigger, that Hashem is kind of pushing us towards building a new building and doing something much bigger. And the way, it's not an easy way, it's a very challenging way, and you have to go through a lot, but eventually, without this, the new building, the coming building, was not going to happen.
And it is a building site. You have these two caravans out there, ready for. It looks like a construction site ready to go. So you are, planning on a big shul, a big new Chabad center here at FSU. One more time, though, you didn't quite answer me about the change in the American society, American Jewish society. I'm talking about students. I'm talking about this like wokeness and that kind of atmosphere. Has it impacted you? Do you see that change? Let's put it that way. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Have you seen a change? And does it impact the way you're able to do events or bring people in? Are you more concerned, because, I don't know, for example, the LGBT thing is so, strong, and Chabad is clearly an Orthodox organization. Like, how is this mental change that's happening societally impacting you?
So I think other campuses that are much more liberal, probably, not probably, I've heard, hearing from my friends, feel that they've been impacted by it deeply and has a big impact on what they do and how they deal with it. It's very difficult. In this campus, it's less of an issue. But you do, the change you do see, I think, primarily is indifference. People are, busy with the phones and busy with social media and busy with so many things that they just, even going back 20 years ago, I think that there was much more interest on the Jewish students. It was easier to get students to come, while now they're just involved with so many things that are taking over the time. We are competing with happy hour on Friday night, people going out to the bars, there's so many things that takes their time, that takes their attention, that you have to work very hard and being very creative in creating motivation and inspiration for Jewish students to come out and really, come for a Friday night dinner, come for a Shabbat, come for a class to care and be involved with the Yiddish fact. But on the other end, once they do get involved, you do see a tremendous thirst and people wanting knowledge, seeking knowledge, wanting to get involved and wanting to learn about their Jewish heritage. It's just harder to get them into the door and get them to want to be involved. I'm not talking about the core group that we have that are very involved and are very interested, but the larger group of people, you have to work harder to get their interest and to get their attention.
Rabbi Schneur-Orichman, I want to thank you. I also want to tell you that when you're out here in the diaspora, you realize how powerful Shabbat is. Shabbat is powerful. We all know that. But around here on campus, it's like, this is the moment. This is the special day to bring them in. I'm thinking about calling it the Eretz Yisrael of time. Is Shabbat, where it's like a moment of holiness, and there was definitely a sense of holiness. There was definitely a sense of like a Baal Shem Tov style feeling here at your Chabad house. You and your wife run a very special place, and the guys felt special. And I had a chance to also help one guy out who knew me, and his name was Jacob, and kind of brought him in a little bit, showed him a little bit of davening, and I could see that he's exactly what you're talking about. He wants it. He has a great thirst. And by the way, he doesn't know how to read the Hebrew letters. And that's another thing that you're offering here at Chabad, which is just basic rudimentary Hebrew. Learn Hebrew, just plug in into the stuff that thank God everything's in English also and all that, but to get, the authentic experience. So, Yisher Koach Gadol. Any other thoughts about? Well, I see you have another thought there.
He's not the only one who came because of you. I think the number of students who came because you knew you were coming, and that's part of the culture we're trying to create, of bringing people like you and bringing students who know about you or people like you and utilizing this opportunity, like the many students we had last night, to teach them. And to open their mind into ideas about being proud of being Jewish, being proud of the Israel, presenting Israel, standing for your right. So these opportunities like this are very, very important for us. And like you said, Shabbos, you see people that taste Shabbos. We had one student here, a young woman who came for Shabbat. And she said, after I've done it once, I can't think of my life without Shabbat. I need it. And she's still doing it until now. She hasn't stopped one Shabbos since she did her first Shabbos. So the Shabbos is definitely an essential part of what we do and showing people the beauty of Shabbat, the beauty of... And in whatever way, whatever level, for some people... It means like coming and spending an entire Shabbat or sleeping over. For some people, just coming for a Friday night dinner. Other, coming for an hour, for half an hour. Everybody on their level, but it's definitely a great opportunity to introduce people to the beauty of Yiddishkeit.
And I forgot that I wanted to say that there was also one lady who is black and is converting. And this is what happens. And I spoke to her just a little bit. And I just said to her, she's told me that she's part of the community here and that it's really part of her life.
and that this is her family. I said to her, you come, and she told me she was converting. I said to her, you come from a Bible background, don't you? She said, yes, absolutely. My father was a pastor, and he taught us the Bible. He taught us the love of the Bible, and that's why I can't live without it. The Bible is, the books of, the stories of Abraham are in my life, and I want to take it forward.
And she's not the only one. We have another one, righteous Gentiles, who was not actually in Jerusalem, going through a conversion process. So yes, there are, you have the righteous Gentiles that come and want to convert and want to be part of this. And we have actually, you know, speaking about Israel, I know you spoke of Shabbat, about the importance of coming to Israel, you know, going to making an aliyah. We have a number of our alumni, a number of the students who went to FSU that live in Israel, live in Jerusalem, you know, studying yeshiva there. We have two students studying in Aish, a couple of students studying in Mayanot. We have a few alum that actually moved there. And that's all as a result of the work that we do. It's like you talked about the faith and the science, you know, on one end, you know, teaching them the Torah, and the other end, teaching them the importance of Israel and the importance of the, you know, of the, not only the spiritual Israel environment, which is an environment of Torah mitzvot, but also the physical importance of the land of Israel and the holiness of Israel. Or like you saw the student who visited Israel, he's in his senior year of school, and he visited Israel, and as a result of this visit to Israel, you know, he never been here for the last few years, but now he started coming, comes to the Daily Minyan, and he's very involved. So definitely Israel is the land of Israel is very well connected with the Torah of Israel, the, you know, the Torah, the Jewish people, the teaching, it's all come together and helps impacting people's lives.
Rabbi Shneur Oreckman, thank you and the Rebbetzin very much for your great work. You guys are awesome. And thank you for having me here at FSU, not only to give me a chance to speak, but also a chance to see what's really going on here on the front lines, the other front lines. You know, we think Hebron is the front lines, and it is. But this is also a front lines for the fight against assimilation and for Jewishness and Jewish peoplehood. So thank you very much.
Baruch Hashem, thank you.
Don't worry. The Yishai Fleischer Show will be right back. So stay tuned.
All right, folks. Yishai Fleischer here. And I am in Tallahassee, Florida, at FSU, Florida State University. And I had the great privilege of speaking this Shabbat at a gathering of three Jewish organizations, Chabad, Hillel, and the Jewish Student Union here at a mega Shabbat that brought together these three organizations. The rest of the Shabbat I spent at Chabad. And I was invited out here, and I was excited for the invitation, partially because it's fun to speak to young people. And I had made it recently a kind of inner goal that I would work more to touch young people and not be just hanging out with people my age or older or fundraising or that kind of stuff and get down to like where the young people are these days. I said to myself, I got to be out here and seeing where they're at and touching their lives. And I want to see what's going on with them. I want to see it for myself. And I also want to impact it. And I got invited, so I was like, you know what, I'm doing this thing. And by the way, interestingly enough, there's this big conference that the IAC, the Israel America Coalition, in Austin, and there's like a protest there and all kinds of stuff. I see it on the Twitter, but you know what? I could have gone there, but I thought to myself, no. Let me go to a place where I'm going to have more an impact, not just to sit in an audience and hang out with young people, see what they're at. I'm standing here next to David Glasser, who's a young student here. What year are you in at FSU?
So I'm a senior here at Florida State.
Okay, so that means that you've been here for many years.
Yes, this is my third year here, but I'm graduating early, so I'm a senior, yes.
And you're looking to law school next year?
Yes, planning to go to law school.
And you're part of the Chabad house, you're the part of this like little warm family called Chabad of FSU?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been part of Chabad of FSU for a couple of years now, yes.
Rabbi Oreckman and the Rebbetzin, and we're at this house here. We're standing outside. It's actually kind of cold. If you want that coat, there's a coat over there. If you're cold, you can put it on. It might be worth it. And young David, you're already kind of looking forward to in your life to next steps. You're thinking about law school, and we talked a little bit about marriage and that kind of stuff. You're also an editor and a writer at the conservative newspaper that has opened up on campus. I never heard of such a thing. Tell me a little about this idea of opening a conservative style newspaper on a college campus.
Yeah, so this is a phenomenon that has been recently spreading across many college campuses, and it's been great to start that here at Florida State. And so we started a new publication called The Capital Collegian, which is supposed to spread the conservative message to students here across campus, and in particular tie in student interest about campus issues that weren't really being talked about in campus media because they tended to lean to the left politically. And so we're getting those conservative voices in the student media ecosystem out there, finally.
One of the main topics that came out throughout my Shabbat here was not Israel stuff, was not Israel's judicial system reforms, and it wasn't about apartheid and occupation and all these issues. No, that was not the issue that came up. The issue that came up was anti-Semitism. And I was very surprised that that was really the issue, and I wasn't as prepared, and that's why it's good for me to get out here. I asked people about what kind of anti-Semitism they felt. Then finally tonight, you told me a little bit about a tale that happened through a different club, and I think it was SDS.
Yes,
tell me about that story.
Yeah, so this was a very troubling event that occurred on campus a couple of months ago. I was just minding my business, walking to class, and there's an organization here on FSU's campus called Students for a Democratic Society. It's a socialist and avowedly anti-Israel club. And so they were hosting this event in the middle of the week where they basically were yelling anti-Israel slogans, F Israel, Netanyahu genocide, etc. And I was just walking to class on campus, and I was just shocked to hear what was going on. Now, thankfully, there's a former IDF soldier that also goes to Chabad here who was debating them, who was pushing back on this blatant anti-Semitism. And towards the end of the event, there was somebody who was more moderate, who was a spectator.
Wait, who is that guy? Is that guy Yoel?
Noah.
So I met with him. He's a libertarian.
Yes.
And he's an intense dude. He was in the Israeli army, and he's like a cool guy, but also kind of like wonky and so he took them on?
Yeah, he did. He was pushing back against them for probably 45 minutes to an hour. I was just standing there. I was cheering him on. It was really great to see. And towards the end of the event, there was an individual who was talking with Noah and with the individuals who were decrying Israel, the socialist club. And what happened was that this moderate was basically trying to say, oh, they're not blaming the Israeli people. They just dislike the Israeli government, and they're just making that known. And the man with the megaphone who was, yelling all these anti-Israel slogans, turns to this moderate person and goes, don't speak for us. We support the Intifada. Long live the Intifada. The Jewish people, the Israeli settlers, they're just as guilty. And so that was really despicable when it was anti-Semitism rearing its ugly head on this campus, unfortunately.
Right. Okay. So that's just an interesting conversation because the moderate guy is trying to calm it down and be like, well, these people have a legitimate they have a legitimate voice. They're not like anti-Israel altogether. They're just trying to focus on the specific, specific policies. But then the guy himself was like, no, bro.
Right.
It's not the policies. It's the country. We don't like Israel. We have a problem with Israel. And that is, I said to you before, and I think it's important, that this has an advantage. I said to you that before that there's an advantage when the bad guys go all the way bad, because when they hate you all the way and they don't hate you part of the way by saying no, we only hate this, Jews fall for that kind of stuff. When they say, well, if you only compromise like this and like this, then we'll understand each other. Jews fall for that. Instead, when they say no, we have a problem with you altogether, there's a certain advantage on that. And you just interviewed me for your newspaper. And you asked me what is the best way to counteract anti-Semitism. I said to you that I gave you a few ideas, but I also said there's a certain advantage in anti-Semitism in that it brings Jewish people kind of together in, for example, Chabad here. But then a lot of people, in truth, are afraid to be Jewish publicly because of this anti-Semitism. Yesterday a few girls said, I tuck in my necklace and that kind of thing. And I've heard that before. But I want to turn that question to you. Anti-Semitism, is it real? Is it something that you face? Is it something that you have a way of counteracting that you think is, give me the experience of anti-Semitism. You told us the story. Now, what about the inner feeling? How does it impact you or your friends?
Right, exactly. I think there's really two types of anti-Semitism, so to speak, that I face and other Jews face on campus. Number one is the type that I was sort of describing before, you know, with the megaphone, F Israel, Netanyahu genocide, you know, decrying, you know, the Israeli occupation and believing that Jews aren't, they don't have a right to their homeland, and that's absolutely despicable. But then there's a second force that's, you know, actively working to subvert the Jewish people, and those are the forces of assimilation. And, you know, it may not be as loud, but it's even more effective because, as you talked about, you have people that are blatantly saying, you know, you're Jewish, we don't like you. And so that gets people over to be, in a lot of situations, more proud of their Judaism, want to identify and push back against those forces. But then, you know, assimilation tends to take a lot of people down. It tends to take them away from their Judaism. And so, you know, that's an anti-Semitism in and of itself that I think needs to be, you know, thoroughly combated. And so, you know, I would just, in my personal capacity, I grew up in a Reform family. I grew up, you know, away from the Jewish religion in large part. And, you know, now I feel like I'm, with Chabad and with my involvement here on campus, far more a part of the Jewish people than I've ever been. I'm starting to wear my yarmulke to campus. I certainly did not grow up doing that. But I'm starting to become more and more proud and confident in identifying openly as a Jewish student here.
Rabbi Oryachman told me that Michael, one of the students here that participates in Chabad, this is his last year. And he went to Israel, and he came back jazzed up about Judaism, and now he's starting to attend Chabad, but he wasn't there beforehand, so his trip to Israel made an impact on him. Do you think that's true, that like a trip to Israel has a visceral effect on people? Have you seen that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I can speak to my personal experience. I've only been to Israel once. I'm hoping to change that later this year to go back to Israel. And that was in 2019, where I actually saw Rabbi Fleischer speaking. I saw you speaking in Israel. And, you know, on that trip, I think it may have been the day I saw you speak or, you know, a few days later, we visited HaKotel. And, you know, I remember distinctly, you know, touching the wall, and I just had this swell of emotions, even though I didn't really have this, you know, religious upbringing. I wasn't deeply connected to my Judaism, but it was a very, very powerful and impactful moment in my life. And so I do absolutely think that, you know, if students, even if they're not from the most religious background, I certainly wasn't, you know, when they go to Israel, they really start to figure out, you know, who they are Jewishly. They begin to identify some more that way. And I think that that is definitely a good way to facilitate their involvement more and more with Jewish groups and organizations on campus.
One of the things you told me that you remember from my speech back then was that I said that we're a tribal people, we're a badass people. That's what you told me, is that right?
Yes. Yep, that's right.
And I was like, that's good. I was like, good, I'm glad I said that, because it's so important to not just think of, and I just said that to your interview for your newspaper, which is, we're not just a religion, we're a peoplehood. When you come to Israel, you connect with the peoplehood. You see that we are a historic people with a land and with a civilization. And if you're not part of the religion, you're still part of the peoplehood. So join the peoplehood actively, marry Jewish. And the also the physical ability to push back is very important, to be able to see that. That, like, yeah, there's anti-Semitism, but it's not like a done deal. We have a country and it knows how to push back against anti-Semitism. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, as you said, I mean, I think it's very, very important that Jews, especially on campuses, and, you know, assimilated young Jews who really haven't had exposure to the idea of, you know, Jewish people as a peoplehood, but instead have just grown up with, like, oh, you know, it's a religion. It's obviously, you know, my ancestors have practiced it, and maybe I will, maybe not. You know, a lot of them don't even believe in the fundamental tenets of the faith, and so they've just abandoned it altogether. But, you know, as you were alluding to, you know, we are a tribal people, we're badass, you know, and you're able to see that up close when you go to Israel. And so that's why I think, in large part, it has such a potent impact, you know, on young Jews like myself, even if not from such a religious background, because you see, oh, this is more than me just going to, in large part, you know, my Reform synagogue or, you know, shul occasionally once or twice a year and saying some words and thinking that they're not so significant in my, you know, heart of hearts, and I just move on with my life. And instead, you actually get a full experience, you get immersed in that, and you realize, you know, we are people who are fighting, you know, very real enemies in Israel, and even, you know, domestically on a different front, you know, with anti-Semitism and everything that's pushing against Jewish people here. And so I think that that's a very, very important experience for Jews to have.
David Glasser, we want to wish you continued success in your law school and in finishing up at FSU. We bless you to be continually connected to Chabad and to Jewish religion. And, of course, to the State of Israel. Obviously, we invite you to make your life in the State of Israel, which is awesome. And we are building a country, and it's really exciting. But in any case, we wish you God's blessings in all of your ways.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Ishai needs coffee. Please help support the show by buying Ishai a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/Ishai. Thank you and l'chaim.
All right, folks, Ishai Fleischer here in Houston, Texas. I'll tell you more about that in just a minute at the outro of the show. But for now, I just want to give a little Dvar Torah, a little table Torah time to think about this week's Torah portion. This week's Torah portion has the concluding plagues in Egypt. And, you know, the strikes against Egypt, they're horrific, including the strike, the plague of the firstborns. So it's really a horrific thing that God unleashed against the Egyptians in retribution and for other reasons. But I don't want to talk about that so much. I don't want to talk about the plagues. I want to talk about the positive commandments. And we have in our Torah portion maybe one of the most important of all positive commandments, in the sense that it's the thing that releases the Jews out of bondage, and that is the sanctification of the new moon, the new month. God says to the Jews, time is yours. You were slaves. Now time is yours. Now time is, you're the master of your time. And you don't have a master over you except for me, but I give you that freedom to decide time, to recognize the time, to make time yours, to make this world one in which the time that you exist in is yours, to make the world a better place. You're no longer subjugated. And now you're free. You're really free to do amazing stuff. That's what God is saying. And the verse is very important, what it sounds like. And it says, let me find it for a second. It says, "Chodesh hazeh lachem, rosh chodeshim, rishon ulachem lechadshei hashana." This is the first month to you, for you. "Chodesh hazeh lachem," this new month is for you. Recognize Passover, the period of Passover, and always mark it, and call out the new month. If you read that word chodesh, it also means chadash. This innovation is yours. This ability to renew things is yours. I give you that power. I'm God, I created the world, but I'm going to give humanity, especially the Jewish people, the ability to create, to make new things. And I was thinking a little bit about the sun and the moon. I was thinking the sun is this, like, you can't touch it. It's the things that, you know, that are immutable in this world. It's the law. It's the way things are. It's the cards that you're dealt. But the moon is much more pliable. It changes. And we can decide, do we want to add another lunar month or not? We have much more impact on the moon. And it's more closer in touch with us. It's not some kind of immutable law. And that's what God says to me. He says, there are things that are immutable, and yet there are things that you can effectuate change. I want to give you that ability to effectuate change. Immediately after that, God says, you know, it's time for me to strike at Egypt, but I want you to separate yourselves by making a sign overtly on your doorways. Put that blood on the doorposts. Some people say that it was an inside of the doorpost, so you would see it as well. But it doesn't matter, inside or outside. The point is that God says, I want you to mark your doors. And that's what we do with the mezuzot. We mark our doorways. Just, have you ever thought about that? What does it mean to mark your doorway? To just say, I want you, God, in this room. As I walk into this room, I remember you. Whatever happens in this room, I want it to be involved with you. I want you to see things. I want you in. So many people in this world want God out of their life. They're embarrassed about God in their life. They don't want him to see things. Or they want to make believe that he doesn't see things. Jewish people, Judaism, what it really calls for is to say, God, we want you in. We want you involved with our mundane life. We want you to see what we're up to. We want you to make sure that we're going in the right direction. It's not just that you help us. It's that we're inviting you to look and to make sure that we act in accordance with the fact that you're looking. So these are two thoughts about this Torah portion, about the breaking of the breaking out of bondage. It's first and foremost, it's the freedom to have your time in this world to do stuff, and that I give you the right to innovate. I give you the right to make new in this world, to create. And if you think about the Jewish people throughout history, really, in many ways, that has been their form of contribution, is that, you know, they're not necessarily the great laborers, but, you know, or the great athletes, but they are great, the great innovators of thought. in the channeling of innovation to this world. It's God's innovation, but channeled through the people. Once they're free from bondage, you're free to create. And the other thing is, set yourself apart and bring me in. Bring me in to your life. That's what the doorpost, the mezuzah, is about. Bring me into your life, God says. And I think that Jews and non-Jews, whoever loves Israel, can bring Israel into their life with a little bit of wine from the land of Israel, with a picture from the land of Israel, with books, holy books from the land of Israel, or talk about, you know, the Torah of Israel, or listen to this show. And those are some of the thoughts from this week's Torah portion. May we all merit to Exodus, to do the Exodus. We have to do the act of Exodus. We have to break out of our own bondages, of our own limitations, and allow ourselves to be that creative, godly being who draws God into this world. In the end, it's not just on our doorways, it's into this very existence, this life, that we're asking God to get closer to. Bezrat Hashem, thank you, Hashem, for the opportunity to speak words of Torah. All right, concluding thoughts right after this. All right, folks, Yishai Fleischer, and I'm in Houston, Texas. That's right, I flew in from Florida to Houston. You won't believe for what? Just for a little party, just for a gathering. Of the celebration of the life of the great Rabbi Yisrael Abuchatzera, the Baba Sali. And this is at a friend's house. He hosts a big party with hundreds of Jews and Israelis here in Houston, Texas, that come to celebrate the life of the Baba Sali, because he's very enamored of this rabbi, and the rabbi saved his life. And I'm here just for a few more hours. I landed a few hours ago. I'm leaving in a few hours. And that's part of the life of going from place to place and connecting with Jews, with pro-Israel people. Along the way, you know, crazy things happen. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, I'm at the airport here in Houston a few hours ago, and my bag doesn't come out. And I'm like, oh boy, this is not the time for that. So I go to the counter, and there's a lady there. She looks like an Indian from India. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I don't know. You know, can she help me? She just looks at me. She goes, where are you from? I go, I'm from Israel. She goes, I am Pakistani. I'm a Muslim. And I've gone to Israel. And she starts telling me about how her friends told her not to go to Israel, how Jewish partners of her son's business told her that Israel is going to be dangerous for her. But she wanted to go to Jerusalem, and she wanted to go also to the tomb of Abraham. She has been to Hebron. And I told her what I was doing. She couldn't believe it. A shudder went through her. This happens to me at the airports a lot. And she asked me to pray. She's like, you go to pray at the tomb of Abraham regularly? I said, yes, almost every day. She said to me, you know, please pray for my three Muslim sons that they get married. I said, give me their names, you know? And she's like, really? And she was so excited by the prospect that this Jew, and this is a Pakistani Muslim lady in Houston, Texas, she says to me, I saw that Jewish women also cover their hair. And I said, yes, my wife covers her hair. She goes, unbelievable, nobody knows that. Unbelievable. So anyway, she was so excited. So you never know who's out here to be your friend and to connect to the story of Abraham. And I just want to thank everybody out there. It's been a great trip. And I'm on my way home. Bezrat Hashem, I'm on my way home. Please pray for me that I get home. I've got to pop through New York City, go to the tomb of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and head back for Shabbos to the Holy Land. It's been an amazing trip here. And I do want to thank all the folks that make this show possible. Yocheved Seidman, Moshe Herman, Ben Bresky, Tabitha, and Lewin were live. And I want to thank all of our sponsors to the show, which include, of course, Retro Watch Guy. They got great watches. I can't wait to get back to my Tissot watch that I got for this coming Shabbos. Check out Retro Watch Guy. Put in coupon code Yishai Bang. Then we got our good friends at JewishPress.com, putting out great news every single day. They are really, a lot of people telling me that since I recommended to them Jewish Press, they really know what's going on. They understand it better. So that's JewishPress.com. They have a great email. They put out our show every single week. Check out our good friends at ProhibitionPickle.co.il, making yummy kosher food, even for a Baba Sali celebration. ProhibitionPickle.co.il. Great pickles, really. All kinds of pickles. The pickles that will blow your head off. Great pickles. Okay, so check them out. And, of course, High on the Har. HighOnTheHar.com will get you up on the Temple Mount, up and running. You got to go to Israel. And when you go to Israel, you want to go to the Lech Lecha that goes to the land of Israel, and then the Lech Lecha that takes you to Har Moriah, to Eretz Moriah, to the land of Moriah, that is, of course, the Temple Mount, which is a land all on its own. I think I just figured that out, that it says Eretz Moriah because the Temple Mount is a land all on its own. So check out highandtheheart.com. My good friend MJ and Rabbi Levy making it happen over there. And of course, hebronfund.org. When you're done with the Temple Mount, go visit the mamas and the papas and keep us strong out there because we're keeping it strong for the whole Jewish people. That's hebronfund.org. Check out our tours, hebronfund.com/tour. I want to thank the Land of Israel Network for making it happen. I want to thank El Al for flying me around and also the other airlines. Thank you very much, El Al. You're doing a great job for the Jewish people and lovers of Israel bringing us to the Holy Land. And I can't wait to get to Terminal 4 at JFK and jump on that plane. Be'ezrat Hashem. The minute I sit down in El Al, I'll feel like I'm already home. I also want to thank the good folks at the Hebron Winery for making the Machpelah wine that I've bought and given to people around here. And really, like, you wanna like feel that you're in the Land of Israel. Drink wines from the Land of Israel. It's so easy, so tasty, so the alcohol in there, that's a holy alcohol. That'll transport you. You know, in Star Trek they have this like beaming thing, and sometimes that's not very believable. You will be beamed to the Land of Israel when you drink a little bit of the wine from the Land of Israel. And that's it. So I want to thank you very much. Please bless me to get home safely and soundly with all my luggage. Got some stuff for the kids. And lots of love to you. And thank you to all the folks that were on the show this week. And God bless you. Write me an email, yishai@yishaifleischer.com. Support us. Buy me a coffee, /yishai. And be part of the Jewish people's great return to the Land of Israel. Whether you're Jewish or you're just friends of Israel, lovers of Israel, you are part of the great story because Hashem is making his story come to life, and we're a part of it wherever we are. And I'm in Houston heading to the Holy Land. God bless you and shalom.